Coming June 1st, changes in Park City's downtown parking are coming. In the studio with details, I have Park City Parking and Fleet Administrator Supervisor Kenzie Colson. She's joined by a parking consultant from Dixon Resources, Julie Dixon, along with Michael Brill, the Executive Director of Historic Park City Alliance. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's see, Kenzie, maybe you can just give us an overview of what is happening this year with parking.
Absolutely. So we have had an ongoing conversation about managing the parking availability in Old Town and Main Street area. And this is not new. It's been going for years, conversations, committees, forums, complaints. And ultimately, a very major study was done by parking experts Nelson and Nygaard. That happened 2015 to 2016. The recommendations from that study are quite extensive. It's not just one thing that they came out with. They brought us a slew of things that they recommend for our community. And so from that, I was hired to get going on the action phase of this. And so that's where we are today. I started with the city December 1st, and we are very aggressively working toward these recommendations. Much of this relates to the larger transportation demand management that you'll hear Alfred speak about, because we really need to help accommodate some of the growth that we've experienced. And so what's happened most recently is that we've issued an RFP. It's very extensive in itself, 145 pages. The proposals are expected back next week, the 17th. And from that, we're going to be able to have the information that we've all been wanting. We want to know what is really possible with our potential vendors for timeline and construction and equipment. And so it's an exciting time, and I know we've got a lot of anxious folks out there, but here we go. We're getting close.
Okay. So we do have, though, consensus, though, on moving forward with these recommendations. That discussion's over.
Council supports these recommendations, and what we will do next is come back with our proposals, and we will go back to council. The likely date would be March 30th. We'll be back with a service provider agreement, and at that time, council can weigh in further on their direction. So far, there's been great support, and last night we heard words of support.
All right. So, Julie, what's your role in this?
Sure. So we got brought on in December, and we're actually helping with the technology and operations implementation. So we actually drafted the solicitation that's out on the street right now, and we'll basically help as an advisor to the city as it comes to the selection of the vendors, the solicitation, the services, and basically the overall implementation process.
So what are we asking, though, people to provide?
Sure. So right now, the request for proposal that's out right now is a complete parking management solution, and it actually incorporates everything from the actual access control technology that will go into the garages. It'll include dynamic messaging signs. It can actually tie in for when you enter the city to talk about where parking availability is, as well as identifying the park and ride locations as well. And I should also highlight, in addition to all of the services that I'm outlining, there is a timeline that this is going to be implemented over. It doesn't all happen on day one. Also, there's a parking and transportation brand that goes along with that signage and messaging, so that when you pull into the city, you actually have a game plan of where you're actually going to be parking. We're also looking at adding in new on-street technology, too, so the pay stations that are currently out there today. You'll see a whole new footprint when it comes to the parking hardware that's out there, as well as equipping our city staff with the appropriate resources to manage and oversee compliance with all of that infrastructure as well.
Yeah, so how much money have we budgeted for this?
That's a great question. There is money in the capital budget that we believe will cover this. Again, we're going to know quite a bit more when the proposals come back. And as Julie referenced, this is a phased approach. And so our primary goal, knowing that the shoulder season is coming, we want to get as much infrastructure in the ground as possible during that ideal time of April 15th to June 15th, when it's a little quieter here. And so, again, we'll know more about rollout, but if we can get some work done during that ideal time frame, then that's the first thing.
Yeah. So what we know is that we've got lots of employees using the parking downtown, especially China Bridge, meaning that we don't have room for our visitors to come, eat, enjoy a show. In fact, I have heard anecdotally people asking for refunds at the Egyptian Theater because they drive around and have no place to park. So, I mean, these are the people we're working for here? the guests, the visitors?
I think we have to develop solutions that work for a number of subgroups. And if we don't have guests and we don't have paid customers, then we don't have anything else. So yes, that's, I think, the group that we're trying to maximize the availability of the most proximate parking for. But we also have to have solutions for the business owners and the employees of those businesses to be able to serve those customers. And it may just be that that's not in the most proximate spots. And so then we have to develop solutions for helping them figure out where are those spots that are a little less proximate and how do they travel from those spots to their jobs efficiently at the time frames that work for them on the shifts that they work, those kinds of details.
Yeah. So what's been the initial reaction then from Main Street businesses?
I mean, I think we've been sort of tracking and trying to participate in this conversation for years, you know, even before I was involved. And so I think we've accepted, too, that it's time to start trying some things. And in terms of the recommendations from the Nelson Nygaard study, I think, you know, our whole group wouldn't agree with all of them carte blanche, but we think there are some good ideas in there. And Julie's team and Kenzie's is embarking on that implementation step. And so I think our job is to help filter which of the implementation pieces have legs and basis in reality and can work for our town and our set of conditions seasonally and when we have sort of our peak period issues.
Yeah, and certainly it's already hard for Main Street employees to find staff. Is this, by pushing them out further with parking, going to make it even more difficult for them to find staff? I mean, right? I mean, you go work Bonanza,
yeah,
right? Park, right? Because you got parking.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I think staffing issues are, there are some more macro inputs that are involved in what's makes it hard to find staff. But sure, we need to be careful that we don't keep burdening employees with more things on their back that makes it untenable, you know, to be employed here and they choose to go elsewhere. Because we do draw on seasonal employees that come from elsewhere and those kinds of things. But no, I think that's part of the task here is to come up with the right set of incentives, the right set of technology to communicate what the alternatives are, and then some resources with real, you know, additional shuttle routes, additional transit service, some free Uber rides, and some of the funding that comes out of paid parking. I think the consensus is we'll spend that back into providing the solutions that are necessary for employees.
Yeah, last night, Julie, you spoke about Park City's free bus service, said it's amazing, and I'm guessing, would you have the same view if, in fact, you were one of those Main Street employees being now asked to park out at Richardson Flat and take a shuttle in? I mean, for $10 an hour, why would you do that?
It's very tough, absolutely, to find that balance. But one of the things that I think is important to mention is there's a substantial public outreach campaign that's going to be tied into this plan. And starting in April, where there's going to be a call for participation, that we're going to be looking for the service workers, the business owners to participate so that we can also see what would be the motivators for the incentive programs to get you to participate and to get you to park in those locations. There's absolutely an opportunity to get that feedback and try to tie those into some of the incentive programs that we're looking for.
All right. There was.
Oh, I was just going to say, I think we're going to have to drill down and understand where our employees are coming from as well. And so I think hopping on a shuttle at Richardson Flats works great if you live in Camas and that's an easy stop on the way. If you already live in Park Meadows and you're a high school person or home from a college job season and doing a seasonal job, that may not work. And so we have to have some interim locations that and they don't all have to work for all 900 employees on Main Street. We have to have bits and pieces that work for each group.
Yeah, there was talk last night also about giving China Bridge a makeover. What does that involve and why is it needed?
It's really about parking has to be simple, parking has to be easy, and has to be welcoming. And one of the opportunities to do a bit of a makeover on China Bridge is with the signage, making it convenient, easy to understand, the wayfinding of how to find Main Street. Sometimes people do come out of the garage and are scratching their heads trying to figure out the direction that they're supposed to go in. So it's really about welcoming, accommodating, and making sure that the resources are available. And being able to find that parking space needs to be simple so that when you come in the garage, there's many levels to it and knowing where that parking space actually is.
All right. So just give me a scenario here. And I've got totally selfish reasons for doing this. But again, I've got four people here in the studio and with, you know, maybe five or six more people coming in during the local news hour. Does that mean now that you guys are going to charge all of you to come to KPCW? Or are all of my phone interviews going to have to be now by phone because I don't have a parky token to let people park?
I think we're going to see some changes in behavior, of course, right away. And I think that Julie can speak a little bit to the adjustment of what will happen, that pricing will be determined during this outreach period coming up. But it will be largely based on the Nelson-Nygaard study. And so folks who want to take a peek at that, I encourage to read the study. It's found on the city website, parkcity.org. Go to departments and then parking. And there's an executive summary if you'd like kind of the short version of the study. And then the longer version contains some pricing models. But by no means is this project designed to punish anyone. And so I just want to say that.
So is it realistic, though, at 8 to 9 o'clock in the morning, China Bridge is going to still be free parking?
I would say that that's something that will be determined. The rate structures can be dynamic, so that when you talk about peak versus non-peak times, I believe one of the council members even spoke about this last night, is that there's actually going to be opportunities to manage the pricing structure based on the time of year and based on the time of day, is that it might be possible that the rates don't kick in until a certain hour of the morning, and whereas they may extend later on into the evening. That's something that gives, with the technology that's going to be provided, it gives the city the opportunity to be flexible in the way that they basically manage the rates.
And if I had to weigh in on that question, I would say I sure hope that there will be times when it's still free if the parking garage is sitting empty, that there's no reason to be charging a premium at those times when we have the technology to change pricing. Having said that, it'll depend a little bit on where we end up with the length of time that you're allowed to park there as well. So, you know, if we make it available that you can park at a certain rate for 8 hours, well, then all we're going to do is encourage all the employees to get here right before that rate kicks in to fill up the garage, and we'll have the same issue. So we've got to look at, you know, all the inputs to decide what's the best solution.
Okay, so we should know a lot more after March 17th and the requests for proposals come back in?
Yep, okay. That's correct.
Do you expect more than a few people?
Right now, Kinsey and her boss, Blake, actually participated. We were all at a parking conference this week, and we actually anticipate we're going to get a handful of vendors responding. So, and it's actually a very complex solicitation that we put out there, so we're really excited if we get multiples.
All right. Julie Dixon, Kinsey Colson, and Michael Brill, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:26. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now in the studio from the PC Mark, I have Recreation Manager Karen Yoakum. Good morning to you.
Hi, Leslie.
You have a couple of programs you want to tell people about?
I do. We have a brand new program called Walk with Ease. It was developed by the Arthritis Foundation, and it is a program to help people be able to walk pain-free. So it is a six-week, three-times-a-week program for anyone. You don't actually have to have arthritis if you'd like to join us. It would be a very social event also. It'll be held at the Mark, and it actually starts on March 20th, so it's coming up very quickly.
What time is that?
It's from 10 to 11 in the morning. We'll be walking on the track at the Mark.
Okay, and the cost for that?
It is $30.
Yeah, so are there actually people who have kind of requested something like that?
We hadn't had requests prior. We were able to get a grant to have two instructors trained, and so they were looking for more classes to be held in Utah. We got this through National Recreation Association, and so we went ahead and did that. We already have some registrants, so we think we're going to have a successful program, and it's countywide.
Okay. Just curious, so, I mean, why do you have to train people to walk? What kind of training is involved?
I think there's some specifics with regard to people who have pain. So, and I'm not sure because I didn't get to do the instructor training.
Okay. So what else have you got?
I didn't need that on my plate, I guess. The next one is really exciting. It's archery. And this is a passion of mine. We've been working with the school district. So this first class will be actually taught at Treasure Mountain, but it is for age 10 and up. So we're offering two classes. One was at the request of junior high and high school students. They wanted a class where they were together with their peers. So it's for age 12 to 17. And then the other one is age 10 and older. And we do have registrants for that class already. So it is a popular activity. And the cool thing about archery is, number one, it's very, very safe. Some people think about archery and they go, oh, I don't want to get shot. Well, you wouldn't, because the rules of the range make it the number two safest sport that you can do. number one being ping pong. So there's not even any comparison there, right?
So when is this going to be held and how much?
That one begins March 28th. It's 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And you can either come, if you're 12 to 17 years, you can come from 3 to 4, so right after school. And then if you want to come to the later one, it's from 4:15 to 5:15, and that's for age 10 and up.
All right. You're doing that where, in the parking lot?
No, it's in the school. So the one at Treasure Mountain will be in the what we used to call the rubber room. I'm not sure what they call it now, the weight room, because it does have weight machines in there. And they have a setup because they actually teach this program at Treasure Mountain also. So it'll already be set up for us. It is for anyone. It doesn't matter your size, your gender, your strength, nothing. Anyone can do archery, and you are in charge of your own success.
All right. And I'm guessing the Hunger Games had a new appreciation.
A big impact on women in archery, for sure.
Okay. And then the final program you've got?
And the last one is a brand new one being held at the Mark. It's called Food for Fitness. And it's being taught by Valerie May, who is a registered dietitian. Valerie is a Park City kid who, she's not a kid anymore, woman who came up in Park City. That one will be taught at the Mark on Wednesday evenings from 5:30 to 6:30. The cost is $50, and it starts April 5th and goes through the month. So it's four meetings. And you can learn the nutritional basics and find out how to fuel up for your workouts. So she'll give you ideas on the best energy, healthy foods that you can do. So Mark Nutrition is maintain hydration, always eat breakfast, remember protein, and concentrate on fruits and vegetables.
Okay.
Pretty common sense, but it's nice to have somebody give you the hardcore.
All right, so parkcityrecreation.org.
Yep.
More information. Okay, thanks for coming in.
Listeners like you.
It's 8:32 now. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, it was a packed house at last night's Park City Council meeting, and they heard everything from e-bikes to Sundance to approving the second option payment to purchase Bonanza Flat. In the studio with more, I have Park City Mayor Jack Thomas, along with Wendy Fisher, Director of Utah Open Lands. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning, Leslie.
So the council decided to move forward with the purchase of Bonanza Flat. And Jack, I've certainly asked you before, what's plan B in the event that we do not have the $38 million in hand as of June 15th?
Well, I can with confidence say that I think we're shifting dramatically away from plan B and focusing on plan A, because I think we're well on our way. We really are. Wendy can talk to some of those numbers, but you know, what started as a dream is really approaching a reality, or we wouldn't have stepped up last night.
All right. So maybe, Wendy, give us an update. Last I'd heard was about $32 million, and again, this is not cash in hand. It's pledges.
Well, some of it's pledges and some of it is actually cash in hand. And we feel very confident, too, that the pledges that are made, things like the challenge grants, because we've met those challenge grants, are going to come in. So looking at pledges and challenge grants and cash on hand that the nonprofit coalition has put together, we have $1.845 million, which is really huge. We also know that there's a $500,000 designation for the Lee Ray McAllister Fund, the State Open Space Fund. We cannot disclose because Salt Lake Public Utilities would like to make their own announcement, but we do know the number, and that brings us closer to the goal. And of course, we have the wonderful contribution from Summit County of the $5.75 million. We also have a commitment financially from Metro Water District, which is a district that serves Sandy City. They, of course, have their watershed here. So we know that that is going to come through, but we can't give you that exact number at this point. And then we also know that based on everything, we're probably about $3.5 million short. When you have a $13 million goal, quite frankly, Leslie, in 60 days, it's nothing short of miraculous from my perspective. And we still have, we're still waiting to hear from Salt Lake County. And they actually will be reviewing the potential of providing funding for Bonanza Flat on Tuesday, March 14th. So we love bringing it right down to the wire.
Right. So in terms of kind of those pledges, when you've added everything up and all of these miraculous moments, you're saying we're still about $3.5 million short that we've got to come up with.
Yep.
So, Jack, go back to you then. In the event that we're about $3 million short, would Park City then just say, you know what, we've got to do this, bite the bullet, and see if we need to fundraise after? Or do you think that $3 million will come, show up?
I'm very confident about the additional $3 million. I think we're going to get there, and I think we'll have more news for you next week.
Okay. Let's see. You had, Sundance Debrief. It had a pretty big turnout. Staff reports that overall things were pretty good this year, but definitely some room for improvement. So what are we looking at in terms of improvements?
I think there's a lot of, communication would be one aspect of it. Engagement with all of the community on Main Street is certainly a part of it. And I think we'll be studying that pretty carefully. Sundance has weighed in. They've been part of those local meetings. They understand, some of the dynamics. But, it's hard to imagine an event that would be impacted by, the snowfall that we had. Also, a 9,000-person women's march. A lot of kind of unpredictable elements filtered into Sundance this year. And I think Sundance does an amazing job to coordinate their event throughout the year. They really plan very carefully. They're ahead of the curve. But when we get these unpredictable aspects, you can't have predictable responses or conclusions out of it. So it's always going to be a bit of a mix. That's the nature of it.
Right. So more opportunity for public input?
Indeed. Mr. Henney intelligently suggested that we continue the public hearing for another time. We were crowding beyond 6 p.m. for our work session. So we really want to have more time for people to weigh in. But all in all, I think we feel that it was a fairly successful year given the parameters and the consequences of weather.
All right. So today is Sundance Managing Director Sarah Pierce's last day with the organization. Did you meet her replacement?
I think they have announced her replacement. I'm sorry I can't remember the name at the moment, but we're very sorry to see her go. She's been such a vital part of this relationship for 17 years.
Well, I'm just,
amazingly,
I guess that's
competent, delightful person, but I'm sure they'll come up with someone that is equally competent and gracious because that's their nature. That's who they are.
Oh, sure. But I'm just wondering, it's just they don't have the track record and the understanding and the don't understand.
I think
what
that person is evolving from, that same team. So I think they're very much engaged.
Okay. So when does this come back? Will it be next week, or are we going to wait a couple more weeks?
I think we're probably a couple weeks out because we just extended it last night, and it's probably not factored into our agenda for next week.
All right. Let's see. You heard from staff about the city employee housing issue. Was there any decisions made here? I mean, how are we moving forward with this?
I think we listened to the staff and their recommendations, and I think that we'll be encouraging critical employees and employees to live in the community. I think that's a part of our responsibility and commitment to making this a more complete town. So we want everyone else to work that way, and we're trying to hold ourselves accountable as well.
All right. In terms of what you're looking for staff, full-time, are we talking full-time year-round staff and then any seasonal people are kind of on their own?
Well, that's still unfolding. I think, we'd like to see critical staff. I mean, I could see the need for critical employees, city manager, police chief, et cetera. This is yet to unfold, and yet we have nothing specific at the moment, but I think it's going that direction.
Yeah, but I see, bus drivers are critical, yet they're also very seasonal.
They are, and so how do you use that space when they're not there? So there are also plans to how do they multipurpose some of those rooms and spaces.
So what was the direction staff gave that council gave to staff in terms of what to do from here?
I think we're going to be coming back with more study sessions and more reports. So we're really just at the beginning of this process.
All right. Council also approved a $300,000 payment. This is toward the e-bike program. Again, that's about half, or is that just a portion of the total cost?
We're working with Summit County. That is the amount that we're putting up. And I think that's going to make a significant dent in the way we function through the summer. We've already seen a large number of people on e-bikes. I have an e-bike. I'm going to get another e-bike. I mean, it's a very practical way of moving around this community.
What we did hear last week,
especially for somebody that's got 71-year-old legs.
What we also heard was that during the off-season, there may not be enough space to store the bikes, so we've got to consider that.
That was a question. I think there is space to store the bikes.
Between the city and the county?
Yeah, easily. We've got space to accommodate bikes.
Okay. Let's see. You and some other council members and staff were in Denver last week for the leadership training through the Climate Reality Project. What was your takeaway from that?
Ethel was just asking me that, so I'm already. I've watched climate, studied climate since the 70s. And, you know, in graduate school, we talked about energy-related projects. There was tremendous enthusiasm back in that time. And then it lost momentum. What I've seen with Al Gore's film 10 years ago or 11 years ago with his first film and this enrollment of people and this building of critical mass of people and this building of critical mass of the science is that the momentum is dramatically picked up and the technology has changed. You know, we are indeed as a culture moving towards renewables. We're becoming more effective and more efficient. So I thought it was an excellent presentation. I thought it was well-founded. The people that were there were science-related folks, broad cross-section of people, intelligent people, engaged and knowledgeable about the issues. So I think it's a great way to build upon that critical mass. I think we saw some of that happen already. You know, Park City's interest cascaded into Moab's interest, you know, through Andy Bierman and Luke Carton. They have extended that kind of movement into that community. They received an award, as did Park City. There were four awards given out. Three of them came to Park City.
Well, congratulations.
Two into Park City, one to Moab, and one to Boulder University.
Okay. Real quick, of course, 2017 is the year of municipal elections. What are you going to do?
Let me say this. I really enjoy this council. I think we've been very effective, very productive, and I think we're in the midst of getting a lot of things done. So I want to focus on that. I don't want to gear up this election process early, and I'll think about this and give you an answer.
Well, I guess later. Your decision, though, a lot of other people's decisions are hinging on your decision. I guess that's why I'm asking.
Yeah, that's a good question.
So, I mean, you could pull the old, Glenn Brown trick, you know, and that is say that you're running for election and then at the last minute pull out and then your replacement is ready to go in there.
Listen, I'll be straight with you, okay? I'm just not ready. And when I am ready, I'll call you.
Thanks, Jack.
Okay.
Wendy, one more opportunity to tell people how they can participate in getting this deal closed.
They can still go to SaveBonanzaFlats.org. So that's SaveBonanzaFlats.org. They can also call all of their friends down in Salt Lake and have them show up to the Salt Lake County Council. We are not done. Want to make that very clear. We still have some money we need to close this gap. So SaveBonanzaFlats.org. Give us a call and show up at the Salt Lake County Council meeting and let them know how critical this is to all of us.
Okay. Wendy, right. Jack, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
Well, the Summit County Public Art Advisory Board launching the second installation of their Dark Storefronts pilot project to bring traffic and new energy to commercial spaces in Summit County. In the studio with details, I have Kristen Mitchell. She is chair of the Arts Board, along with board member Jenny Dearson. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So, Kristen, the first installation was called Inside Out Park City. Inside Out Park City. It took place in New Park last summer. So when and where will version two happen?
Well, the creative process has just begun. We are accepting submissions from community members of photos that they take of the view from their door. And the upload deadline for those submissions is next Friday, March 17th. So that the creation of the work is happening right now and over the course of the next week. And the exhibition opening remains to be seen. I think we're talking about mid-April, but we'll be back to announce that once the curation of the artwork is complete.
All right. So, again, explain what people need to take a photo of.
So the concept is to take imagery of the view from Summit County residents' doorways. So that represents your view of the world from your home and however you interpret that. I could see a very literal representation of doorways with spectacular views of the Uintas or snowy fields. Someone mentioned some elk or a sidewalk with a Snickers wrapper on it. Or maybe your car feels like your home and you take a picture of what it looks like from the car door. So it's really up to the people taking the pictures to decide where their home is and what the world looks like from their home.
How many can you accept?
We can accept an unlimited amount. So I would love it if every single person that lives here submitted a picture. I think that the more images we have submitted, the better the exhibition.
Oh, sure. How many windows, though, do you have to fill?
So far, I think we have, Jenny.
You know, I think, so that's another great question, Leslie. So we have a variety of Summit County properties that are willing to host these photos. What's important to know is it's not just dark storefronts. It's storefronts in general. So it's commercial properties, and some are also dark storefronts. And so we're also still looking for businesses that want to host the photographs. We have a list of properties, and which is so great, again, is we're really encouraging economic diversity throughout Eastern Summit County. That is kind of our target area. If there's other businesses that are interested in hosting the photos, you can also contact us and let us know you're interested, and we'll start working on you with those agreements. And again, the more photos we get, the more, you know, that'll kind of depend on the size of the photos. Mm-hmm. And the curators will do a great job with kind of placing the different photos. So it's almost like a scavenger hunt. You don't know where your photo is going to be displayed, and really getting people up into those Eastern Summit County businesses, whether it's going and grabbing tacos or the best donuts in Summit County and maybe in the state of Utah at the Chevron gas station or wherever. It's really it's a unique exhibition space.
Yeah. So people have until Friday, a week from
next
today.
Next Friday, yes.
And they just, what, email, JPEG, or what?
The website is darkstorefronts.org, and there is a release form and an upload submission button. There's also a contact form if anything goes wrong or it's just too cumbersome for you, and send us a note. If it doesn't work, we'll figure out how to get you in.
Okay. So how long will the work stay up?
I think our plan now is 3 months. The Dark Storefronts Inside Out went for 3 months, and that seemed to be the right amount of time. It remains vibrant. Also, store owners only are willing to contribute, you know, 3 months of their window to this purpose. So we're anticipating, you know, kind of over the spring, summer months.
Okay. And again, why are we doing this?
The goal of the Summit County Public Art Program is to connect and unite Summit County. So what a wonderful purpose to have. So the idea of this project, we proposed it to both the RAP grant and received a RAP grant for that, and the Utah Division of Arts and Museum provided the grant funding for this, with the idea that this collaborative community creative process connects people through both the creation of the artwork and the expression itself. So, you know, you can imagine seeing 200 images of the view from people's homes, and we'll see how we're different and how we're the same in those images.
Do you want to add something, Jenny?
You know, I just wanted to add too, you know, this is for anyone in our community to participate in, whether you're a kid or an adult. Whether you've lived here for a week or lived here for 40 years, it doesn't matter. And you can, it's not just photographs that you take during this next week. It's if you have photographs of views from your door. You know, one thing I know that I'm going to take a picture of is every morning I drive past the Jordanelle Reservoir, and I think it's one of the most beautiful views. And every morning it's different, and I'm so lucky to have that view every morning when I drive into town. So we are unique and diverse in our community, and this is a great way to engage with our community through public art, and we're so excited about this project and looking forward to seeing all the submissions.
Okay, darkstorefronts.org, and we'll bring you back to find out where people can see them once they're up.
Once they're up.
Okay, thanks, Kristen,
Leslie.
And Jenny, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News. KPCW News Time now, 8:52. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. This is the local news hour on KPCW. Applications are being accepted for the 2017 Joseph James Morelli Scholarship through the Park City Community Foundation. In the studio with details, I have Joe's mom, Barbara Ruwasco Morelli. Good morning, Barbara.
Hi, Leslie, and thank you so much.
Well, let's just first just talk a little bit about Joe. He was a Park City High School graduate of 2012. He was tragically killed in a car accident in his college state of Montana in 2014. What would you like us to know about Joe?
I think Joe struggled with dyslexia, and unfortunately, our family was not aware until he was in high school when we finally diagnosed him. And it wasn't until that he was diagnosed, got his accommodations, got the IEP, that he really flourished and just did incredibly well. However, when he did graduate from high school, because we diagnosed him so late, he was still at the sixth grade reading level. But then he did go on to get honors in engineering at college in science fields.
Yeah, so he wasn't a great reader or a writer, but he was a phenomenal mathematician.
Yeah, mathematician, yeah. Engineer. You know, and growing up, we always saw signs that we used to joke with him. You know, Joseph, why aren't you following the instructions? Like, can't you read the instructions? And couldn't he read the maps? But yeah, he struggled with that. He could not.
Yeah. So you've set up this scholarship through the Community Foundation as a way to remember him, have his legacy live on. How much is there to deal with here in terms of a scholarship? Isn't it just one?
So actually, this has been remarkable, and it's taken off beyond our wildest dreams. So it's now in its third application season. The first year, we started off small, and I could not do this without the help and support of Marcy Abate, who's a dear friend, and Ollie Wilder at the Park City Community Foundation, Katie, and everyone there. We started with eight applications. We picked two the first year. Last year, we had 50 applicants, and we picked 10 and gave away $18,000. This year, and we're not even closed yet, we have over 200 applicants from all over the country. And we hope to select maybe 15 children and give away $25,000. So these are significant grants that can really help these kids with tuition, support, tutoring, resources, computers. And we give upwards of $2,500 per child.
Wow. And again, so there was some kind of endowment, and then it's just been growing, and then you're just pulling off. Is that how it's working?
So it's friends and family, community, and again, thank you everyone who's listening, who's donated, who's helped establish this, really, in Joe's memory. Hospital colleagues, you know, people we've known in our past, people who knew Joe. Montana State, the Dean of Engineering, is actually on our review committee. Bob Mercer from Promontory, Beth Armstrong, Promontory Foundation supported us. It's really a grassroots effort that's just taken off.
Oh. So do you have to raise new money every year? I guess that's what I'm asking.
We do.
Okay.
And I'm not very good at being a fundraiser, and it's just sort of been trickling just by the awareness. And we will be having a thank you event in August, the day after actually Joseph's birthday, August 19th. And there's a singer-songwriter that we're going to be bringing out, Aaron Chadwell, who really took to this cause. And he's going to be performing for us. So I invite everybody who's been part of this this effort and knows Joe to come and participate at Promontory.
Yeah. So you decided to open it up to anybody in the country, huh?
Yes, we did. Again, because the need was just so great. And Money and Time found us and said that we're only one of nine scholarships across the nation that actually can help college kids with this type of learning disability. So there's a huge need.
And that's what's, I think, kind of interesting that you've heard from at least one of the applicants that I had read about. Just, you know, the GPA isn't there, and so just kind of overlooked.
Yes, and so often scholarships go to children who are, you know, excelling, overachievers, the high GPA, and these kids are so bright. But you're right, the GPA is not there, and they're the ones that get so discouraged. And if these kids aren't recognized for their efforts, you know, sometimes they don't make the best decisions and they do end up going down the wrong path if they don't have the support. And we're here to help them get that support.
So how does somebody still apply? There still is time for this year?
There's still an application, yes. It's on the website. So if you go to Park City Community Foundation, Heather Briley has been fantastic. We really want to see Park City students apply. We have Utah applicants applying from Salt Lake. And yeah, we really want to support this community, so we welcome those applicants.
So have you heard from the dozen or so kids that have already received one?
Yes, we do. We stay in touch with them. It's really nice. And we hope to see them again in August at the thank you party.
Okay. Again, the deadline then to do this is when?
March 17th.
Okay. Anything else you want people to know?
No. Just again, please consider us around the time of Live PC, Give PC as well. And as long as we can keep raising money, we can keep giving it out and do good work.
Okay. Hey, Barbara, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much, Liz.